I want to thank Reverend Roger for asking me to preach, which he's done in the past. It's a different role for me. But in the UU spirit of justice and fairness and reciprocity and job sharing, Roger will conduct the choir this fall on an anthem of his choice. If you peek into the Reverend Dr. Jones's book-lined office, it reminds us that most sermons are drawn from voluminous reading, searching the World Wide Web, sifting news and statistics, extracting wisdom from expert sources, sometimes followed by prayer on Saturday night, as the sermon has yet to gel. But as my reading this morning indicates, my expert sources are all middle and high school students. On a sleepless night right after I heard the news of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shootings, I jotted down memories of students that stuck with me. I remember, too, my own embarrassing moments, my fumbling, my faux pas, my failures as I tried to do my job. But I remember many of those kids. Back then, we always called them kids, even high school seniors. Is that still okay? I recall their youthful optimism, their resilience, their emotional ups and downs, their struggles. Drawing from our own UU values and covenant language, I'll share some examples of their helping hands, their integrity, their laughter, their love, their courage. In a role reversal, we elders are now going back to school, and our students have become our teachers. I've changed all the names to ensure privacy, and I'm not mentioning any specific schools where I taught. So how many of us have made a child cry? Let's be honest. How many have made a child cry more than once? I learned a lesson in humility and forgiveness in my first month of teaching in 1980, with minimal teacher training back then, no computers, just a rarely used wall phone, and student helpers running back and forth from the office with notes. We took attendance by hand and clipped it to the outside classroom door. Remember that? New to the band, trying to get the band students tuned up and quiet and ready to play, I asked for a volunteer to help me take roll. A flautist in the front row eagerly raised her hand, so I gave her the roll sheet and pencil. And she began to call roll very slowly. Now, I was feeling time pressure. I had to put the attendance out. I had to rehearse the band, so I actually ripped the pencil and the paper from her hands and took over calling roll. When I looked down shortly thereafter, I saw a stunned, frightened girl with tears rolling down her cheeks. Oops. Now, I know a good teacher is tactful, calm, sensitive, confident, quietly in charge, and I was none of those things. But I did step out of the classroom with her in the hallway, left the band tootling, and humbly apologized for the first of many times in my career. I think I asked her to be the student band music librarian, which patched things up. I learned the hard way that our youth want and need to feel appreciated, to be successful, to enjoy their experiences, exactly what you and I want, duh. And it works both ways. At a mail and copy shop, a 20-something employee asked me, "Are you Mr. Atwater? Do you remember me? I was in your sophomore world history class." "I need to apologize. We were really mean to you. I'm sorry." Well, of course I remembered her, even before I saw her name tag on her UPS shirt. Naomi, she and her friends were awful. They were terrible to me. But I didn't say that. I said, "Call me Keith," and we shared a few good memories. Naomi, now a grown-up, professional, successful graduate, waited on me regularly at that UPS copy store until she got promoted and transferred. Encounters with ex-students are rather rare, and it's really good to confirm that sometimes we teachers have helped these teens on their way. I learned that our youth value acceptance. They need to feel free and safe to try on identities, to grow into their authentic selves. Quentin was a tall, handsome lad in my choir and creative writing classes, always trying out for the school musicals. He usually wore all black with black cowboy boots and said he was going to make it on Broadway someday. I admired his self-confidence. He voluntarily stepped up to support me strongly when the choir balked at performing a goofy holiday number at a pep rally. I think it was called The Man with the Bag. He happily wore the whole Santa suit and tossed out candy at that pep rally. The song was a hit. Now, I noticed he spent most of his free time with another young man, a close companion, and this was before the days of same-sex dates to the prom. But I'm glad to say that our teachers, our students, could make a safe space for students like Quentin to be free to be themselves. I learned that our youth can summon up courage as they navigate the risky road to adulthood. Chris was a quiet, thoughtful sophomore with green eyes and braces. I learned later of his fear of being outed among his peers at this vulnerable age. But he turned in an original poetry project co-written with his closest gal pals, where he was able to obliquely and cautiously come out to me in his literature. I had earned his trust, and I hope that all of us elders can be so trustworthy and available consistently. I think later he and his supportive gal pals and some other brave teens formed a campus chapter of the then rather new GSA Club, the Gay Straight Alliance. Is the GSA still a club in local schools or schools nationally? Good. I learned what our female students have to navigate on a regular basis, even in supposedly safe environments. On a youth choir tour, we camped a couple nights while on the road. One night at a state park campground, two girls asked to speak to me privately. They were not their usual fun, funny, outgoing selves. They reported that one of our van-driving volunteers, a single man in his 20s, who transported the risers, the amplifiers, the dresses, and sometimes pizzas for us, had been hanging around very close to the entrance to the women's showers and bathrooms. They called him creepy. Now, I was relatively new to teaching and leading student group trips, and I knew I had an unpleasant situation. These girls were apprehensive about approaching me, nervous, reticent, but brave. And this was 35 years before hashtag MeToo. I realized they trusted me, they needed me, they weren't making this up, they weren't exaggerating, and they and probably most of the other choir girls felt vulnerable, nervous, uncomfortable, unsafe. And I, just a few years older than this creepy man, was their trip leader, their guardian, their conductor. So I had to step up, and I did. And we know that minors of both sexes face these situations frequently. As trusted adults, we must try to make all young folks safe. We need to be aware and stay aware, open, vigilant, attentive to our youth. I learned of the pain of bullying. Rachel was in my middle school drama elective, physically mature, lively and fun, but sensitive. She tearfully confided in me that some boys called her ho on the playground. Back then, sad to say, we had no anti-bullying policy and zero teacher training. But this was a call for help. I said I liked her, I think thought other students liked her. I said those boys might be attracted to her but were too immature to express that appropriately. And as I'm almost as fond of puns as Gordon Gerwig and desperate with no strategy, I told her a hoe was simply a garden tool. Well, maybe it helped because later I heard out on the playground her hurl that right back at some boy and said, oh yeah? A hoe is just a garden tool. But bullying and now cyberbullying are serious problems, and we must do all we can to protect our youth. I learned our youth value justice, fairness, acceptance, respect. Many become passionately politically active, as the Douglas High School students are in taking on the NRA. One morning in a choir class, a few tenor and baritone boys came in wearing homemade construction paper pink triangles taped to their shirts. Now, I'm sure they knew that I knew what that symbolized. They knew I wouldn't ask them to take it off, and they were probably pleased that I noticed and asked, so, what's up? Allegedly, another teacher that morning had told a male student in his class disparagingly to stop acting so gay, hence this quiet but visible protest. I was impressed by their audacity Even as I felt conflicted, knowing a fellow teacher was implicated in this alleged incident, I acknowledged those boys' righteous anger and supported their right to express themselves. Much later in my last high school teaching position, I had on my bulletin board a GSA club flyer, a rainbow flag, a gold Jewish star, and a pink triangle, among many other images. I did get a parent complaint about the rainbow. This was a very conservative city, but to his credit, my principal backed me up fully. I learned that my students and their teachers and mentors are, or should be, and can be an intergenerational community traveling together with helping hands and open hearts. In case you haven't noticed, teens are very quick to spot phoniness, cant, disinterest, inconsistency, condescension. They're equally quick to trust and support and help their teachers. Returning to high school teaching after some years of college teaching was rough. Two or maybe more students in my AP sophomore English class went privately to a fine veteran biology teacher they trusted and loved and told her of my difficulties with classroom management and really teaching the material well. So Mrs. Barber pulled me into her empty bio lab to deliver a very blunt, career-saving crash course in high school teaching. Mrs. Barber said those students liked me. They saw my potential, and they really wanted to help me to bloom, to improve, so that the class could be educational and fun. And boy, our students love laughter and fun. Once I was trying to line up the saxophones and clarinets on a football field for a halftime marching band formation. I was so non-PC then. I hollered at one kid to go around on the end of the row by that short girl. Well, she was a feisty student, and she said, "Who you calling short, pebble butt?" Now, in context, in the 80s, tight slacks for men were very fashionable. At another high school, different high school, I was rehearsing a halftime show on the 50-yard line, standing on a platform that I think the coaches used. I was hopping around, conducting some rock and roll song, bouncing around, misstepped, and bounced right off the platform. My band was rolling on the field in hysterical laughter. I've often thought of trying that in choir rehearsal to see if I can. My students then reminded me of their favorite joke, riffing on many a parent's caution. It's only funny until someone gets hurt. Then it's hilarious. On my last day in one AP English class, the students all stood up on their desks on a cue from one student, watched Dead Poets Society with Robin Williams, if you remember that scene, and they stood on their desks and they gave me this canned corn for my corny jokes. Inscribed now in very faded felt pen, "Always be true to yourself," and signed from my class. I've kept that for 18 years. I've learned that many young people are very spiritual and seek spiritual growth. They are open and curious about religions. I recall a girl who joined the youth church choir the year we toured with the campground incident. Funny, outgoing, she jumped right in. During some goofy food pun contest, she closed the show with, "Aren't you sorry you started this?" She was very perceptive, very thoughtful, an open student during our choir Bible studies. At a concert stop on the coast, she solemnly yet joyfully asked our youth pastor to baptize her. Picture 24 supportive teens, a chaperone, and their choir director in the knee-high Pacific surf, with t-shirts over shorts and bikinis under blue sky, celebrating with this girl as our youth pastor dipped her gently under a wave, saying those familiar ancient words as she joined the Christian community in this unique and beautiful setting. An enduring memory. I have no memory of my infant baptism, but I remember this baptism. I learned that our youth can be caring and compassionate, open and accepting. For a brief while, a young soprano with a lovely voice who used an electric wheelchair joined this church youth choir. I was so proud of that choir of mine who instantly included her, helping her into and out of her choir robe and stole, sharing their music folder with her, easing any self-consciousness, and all this in a pre-ADA compliant church setting. I recall lots of laughter and them brushing her long hair before each service in which they sang. I end near where I began when this sermon grew out of reflections prompted by Douglas High School, thoughts of teens growing up too soon, of deep pain, of love and loss and courage. I had a small town high school choir. They were very close. They had all grown up together. I remember Candace, a happy, goofy, fun-loving singer with long, curly hair. One weekend night, I got a surprise call from the counselor, who was also the principal's wife. A group of teens had been hanging out in the parking lot. Perhaps alcohol was involved. Candace had apparently jumped on some friend's moped or little scooter without a helmet. She braked too hard, and the boy in his car right behind her tapped her rear wheel with his bumper as he braked too late. She flipped off backwards onto the asphalt and was in a coma in the local hospital. That teen driver behind her was also in my choir. I don't know how we got through school the next week. And I think at the end of that week, I drove up to school and cresting the hill, heading for the parking lot, and saw the school flag at half staff. I have no words to describe that. We teachers had no training in grief counseling. I recall talking to parents and students, but my strongest memory is of their love and mutual support, embracing the boy who was behind the wheel that night and each other. I had by now at least learned to keep lots of Kleenex in all of my classrooms. I rehearsed a quintet of Candace's closest girlfriends, and somehow, Lord knows how, they managed to sing, get through the song they had chosen, one of Candace's favorites, at her memorial. I actually can picture her face still because her framed yearbook picture was on her casket, another indelible image. There are more student stories, but I'll leave you with this thought, especially for those of us rather far removed from our own youth and school days and or from close regular contact with those whom one principal used to call youngsters. Our teens, our youth, reveal to us their values, though in their sometimes less articulate words, but through their actions, which speak louder than words, and through the intense experiences in their young lives tested in this trial we call growing up. I'm going to close with song number 1012 from the Teal Hymnal. You're not going to sing it. I'm not going to sing it. No one knows it yet. But as I read the hymn, imagine the I in this lyric as these students, these youth, these young people, these teens. And imagine the you in this text as us, their elders, their mentors, their parents, their grandparents. When I'm frightened, will you reassure me? When I'm uncertain, will you hold my hand? Will you be strong for me? Sing to me quietly? Will you share some of your stories with me? If you will show me compassion, then I may learn to care as you do. When I am angry, will you still embrace me? When I am thoughtless, will you understand? Will you believe in me, stand by me willingly? Will you share some of your questions with me? If you will show me acceptance, then I may learn to give as you give. When I am troubled, will you listen to me? When I am lonely, will you be my friend? Will you be there for me? Comfort me tenderly? Will you share some of your feelings with me? If you will show me commitment, then I may learn to love as you do.